Translation. Lord Brahma said, "My dear demigods, the human form of life is of such importance that we also desire to have such life. For in the human form, one can attain perfect religious truth and knowledge. If one in this human form of life does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his abode, it is to be understood that he is very much affected by the influence of external nature." Purport. Brahmaji condemns very vehemently the condition of the human being who does not take interest in the personality of Godhead and his transcendental abode, Vaikuntha. The human form of life is desired even by Brahmaji. Brahma and other demigods have much better material bodies than human beings. Yet the demigods, including Brahma, nevertheless desire to attain the human form of life because it is specifically meant for the living entity who can attain transcendental knowledge and religious perfection. It is not possible to go back to Godhead in one life, but in the human form, one should at least understand the goal of life and begin Krishna consciousness. It is said that the human form is a great boon because it is the most suitable boat for crossing over the nescient ocean. Spiritual master is considered to be the most able captain in that boat, and the information from the scriptures is the favorable wind for floating over the ocean of nescience. The human being does not take advantage of all these facilities in this life is committing suicide. Therefore, one who does not begin Krishna consciousness in the human form of life loses his life to the influence of the illusory energy. Brahma regrets the situation of such a human being. Translation again. Lord Brahma said, "My dear demigods, the human form of life is of such importance that we also desire to have such life. For in the human form, one can attain perfect religious truth and knowledge. If one in this human form of life does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his abode, it is to be understood that he is very much affected by the influence of external nature." So, Brahma speaking to the demigods, who I believe are approaching him as they oftentimes do when there's a dilemma, a calamity. I think this calamity was what, Diti? He was about to give birth. And the seed of Kasyapa was actually about to bear fruit. And I think because of the pregnancy of Diti, there was a great disturbance created throughout the whole universe, and it was choking the demigods. And they were very concerned and approached Lord Brahma, appealing to Lord Brahma as the original creator of this universe for a solution. And Lord Brahma is herein beginning to describe the kingdom of Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. And I believe the reason why he's speaking about the spiritual world, he's going to gradually introduce what took place there previously when the four Kumaras entered Vaikuntha and were stopped by two gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, and thereby Lord Brahma is going to explain who was in the womb of Aditi, none other than one of the gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay, who was about to take birth as Hiranyakashipu. Nonetheless, that's I think that's further on. But before getting to that point, he's giving a description of Vaikuntha. And that's why this chapter is entitled Description of the Kingdom of God. And here, at this verse and in the previous verse, I guess yesterday's verse, he said it's very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. This is, I guess, relevant to our topic last night. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkness region of ignorance. So, and then in this verse, he's explaining that the whole purpose of human form of life is to understand this transcendental abode of the Supreme Lord. And if one does not use the human form of life for understanding, what is it? Kamasya nindriya patiya lavo jivete yavata jivasya tatva jigyasya nato yasya hakarmabhi. Life's desire should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire to live only because the human form of life enables one to inquire into the absolute truth. And this should be the goal of all of one's work. This is first canto Bhagavatam, where Sutta Goswami is explaining that don't waste the human form of life for sense gratification. As Lord Rishabhadev also says in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, speaking to his sons, he says of all living entities who have accepted material bodies in this material world, one who has been awarded the human form of life should not waste it for sense gratification, which is available for the hogs and dogs that eat stool. One should engage instead, use the human form of life for the execution of divine austerities and penances, by which one achieves a platform, by which one's heart becomes purified, and one achieves real happiness, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. So this is Lord Rishabhadev's instructions to his sons, again, explaining the importance of that now you've been awarded a human form of life, don't waste it for sense gratification. Instead, you should inquire into the nature of the absolute truth, which is, of course, the transcendental realm of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Prabhupada is explaining that the human form of life is a very rare and valuable gift, and therefore should not be wasted. Simply, as he says right here, he says, if one in this human form of life does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his abode, it is to be understood that he's very much affected by the influence of external nature. Therefore, we give the example that the human form of life is considered a very valuable gift. After wandering throughout 8,400,000 species of life, one finally achieves the human form of life, and if he does not use it for self-realization, then he misses his chance and may have to take birth again in the lower form of life. Therefore, an intelligent person utilizes his human form of life to the full potential and does not waste it. Person who wastes it is described to be a creeper or a miserly person, whereas the devotee is called Brahmana, a broad-minded person, because he understands the value of the wealth he has been given by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Just as Prahlad Maharaj, I think when he was talking to his classmates, he was describing in his instructions of what he learned in the womb from his spiritual master, Narada Muni. He said, he gave the example to his young friends, who are all 5-year-old boys, that one should be very careful and should not waste the human form of life. And he broke it down, the human form of life, in a very interesting way, saying that one who's given the human form of life, he may live for 100 years. And he says that, okay, now you have 100 years in the human form of life, so you use it to full potential. But, he says, problem is that most people, especially those who are influenced by the modes of ignorance, compassion, they waste 50% of their life sleeping, by sleeping 12 hours a night. So he says, okay, 50% of your life is already gone, sleeping. And I was just reading, actually, something interesting. I think it's coming up in Bhakti Lokaram, what I was reading last night. Just a short point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in this section, in reference to sleeping, he says, a materialist sits in the chair of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges except during sleep. Then he says, but even during sleep, many thoughts such as good and bad dreams come. So he says, even in sleep, so one is getting so many good and bad dreams, but that such good and bad dreams also have no connection with reality. They're just simply dreams. And so therefore it's a complete waste, like the verse in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam that explains that the dualities, although the dualities of the material world do not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul considers them to be real due to the influence of his impure intelligence. It gives the example, just like a person dreams of night something very good or something very horrible, or he daydreams of something he would like to have or something like he would like to avoid, he creates a reality that has no existence beyond his imagination. So, I think this is spoken by Havi in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. He's saying that when a person has a very nice dream at night, he wakes up, he's very happy. When he has a terrible dream, when he wakes up from the dream, he's sad because he had a very nice dream, and he wakes up and realizes, oh, it was only a dream. So he's sad. But when he has a terrible dream, after he wakes up and he's happy. So he's feeling happiness or sadness, but it has no connection with reality. It's only connected to a dream. So 50% of one's life is wasted sleeping and then having dreams, good and bad dreams, would have no connection with reality. So as Prahlad Maharaj says, automatically 50 years is gone for a 100-year lifetime. 50 years is gone sleeping. For those who sleep 12 hours a night, of course we should sleep less than 12 hours. But he's talking about specifically materialistic people who take shelter in sleeping. Of course, these days people can't get more than 2 hours sleep because they're so stressed out. But that's another point. Prahlad Maharaj then goes on to say, okay, half your life is gone, human form of life is gone, sleeping. He said, but in the first 10 years, from birth to childhood, one is completely bewildered about life. And he said, the next 10 years, what frivolous play. Nobody's, in one's youth, teenage years, he's engaged in frivolous activity. He's not really considering the importance of life. So that's 70 years gone. Then he says, and the last 20 years of life is old age and invalidity, where one is just completely can't do anything. Can't. Because he's burnt up his whole life in sense gratification. When he gets to the last 20 years of life, the only thing he can think about is his body and pain and how to avoid pain. And then reminisce about when he was younger and then become senile, which many people do, and minds how do you know? Very difficult for one who's not utilized the human form of life to acquire the absolute truth. The later years of life are very, very hard to deal with, to cope with. So he says, last 20 years of life, gone by invalidity. So he says, and the only years left, what does he say? I think the only years left are those years where one, the best years of his life, which he uses for, you know, simply for accumulating wealth and to live for sense gratification and become very much attached to his material body. The best years of his life, those are the best years, are wasted. So he says, therefore, if you look at the human form of life over an expanse of 100 years, what have you got? If you don't actually, and therefore his whole point is better now, while you're 5 years old, before it's too late, before the whole life goes, and you've wasted the whole thing. While you're 5 years old, don't think, yes, well, when I get older, that's spiritual life. No, while you're 5 years old, take it up. Begin your spiritual life so it's not wasted in this way, as he described. And that was the essence of Prahlad's instructions to his classmates, describing the characteristics of one who wastes the human form of life in simply the pursuit of sense gratification. And Prahlad Maharaj gave really heavy, very, very heavy instructions in that chapter. If you want to, what Prahlad learned with it, I think it was in what he learned within the womb from Narada Muni, that's the chapter, where he really spells it out, what are the dangers of just throwing all of your energy in to the attachments of household life without once ever taking into consideration that there's an existence or life beyond this world. And therefore, in the same seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, in the later chapter, just in a few chapters later, when I think it's Narada Muni is instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj. Yudhisthira Maharaj specifically asks the question to Narada Muni and says, you are a brahmachari and I'm a grihastha. I'm griha muradi. I'm one, being a grihastha, I'm one who's ignorant of the actual goal of life. Can you please instruct me in such a way so that I can actually take full benefit of scriptures, take full benefit of this life, whereby I can actually achieve perfection in this life, despite the fact that I'm ignorant of the goal of life. So he asked Narada Muni to please instruct him, taking the position of a householder who is entangled, too entangled. And Narada Muni begins his instruction by saying that it is the duty of the householder to maintain. I've got it right here. Why don't I read the verses? It's just a few verses in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, whereby he specifically states a very, very important point about hearing the scriptures, hearing about the spiritual world. He says that. I'll get there. That's called ideal family life. For those of you who never thought it existed, here it is. Ideal family life. Maharaj Yudhisthira inquired from Narada Muni, "Oh my Lord, oh great sage, kindly explain how we who are staying at home without knowledge of the goal of life may also easily attain liberation according to the instructions of the Vedas." Narada Muni replied, "My dear king, those who stay at home as householders must act to learn to earn their livelihood. And instead of trying to enjoy the results of their work themselves, they should offer these results to Krishna, Vasudeva. How to satisfy Vasudeva in this life can be perfectly understood through the association of great devotees of the Lord. Next verse. A grihastha must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and his incarnations, as these activities are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. So he's explaining here, this is, grihastha must earn an honest means of livelihood, to maintain body and soul together, should offer the fruits of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord, and he must hear. Of course, when one actually accepts what is necessary for maintaining body and soul together, and he goes on to explain, yava griyeta jataram tavat svaham jahinam arikam yobhimanyita sastinam dandam arhati. One should aspire for as much wealth necessary to maintain body and soul together. One who aspires for more than this is considered to be a thief and deserves to be punished by the laws of nature. So this is a later instruction in this chapter to a householder life, which says, how does a householder earn his livelihood? He earns whatever is necessary to maintain body and soul together. He doesn't aspire for more than that. And Prabhupada explains in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam that one who lives in this way, he lives simply to accept whatever is necessary to maintain body and soul, doesn't aspire for more wealth, which is unnecessary for sense gratification. Then one who lives in this way, then what does he do? He accepts whatever he offers everything to the Lord, but he may keep for himself whatever he needs. He says that if he keeps whatever he needs, because he's offering everything to the Lord, because he's using his human form of life, minimizing the demands of the body by not getting too much involved in prayas or over-endeavor for maintaining material things which are very difficult to maintain. He lives very simply, and therefore he utilizes his life for ultimately hearing about Krishna, and he offers his body for hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then Prabhupada says that whatever he takes for himself is prasadam. It's prasadam. Because he's already offering his life to the Supreme Lord. He's using his life for its real purpose. Naha yascheha karma bi. Life's desire shouldn't be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire to live because the human form of life enables him to inquire to the absolute truth. This should be the goal of all of his work. That means he works to maintain his body so that he can hear about Krishna. That's why he maintains the body. He doesn't work so he can engage in sense gratification. So one who works to maintain the body and minimizes the demands of the body, and he goes on hearing about the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's using the human form of life to its full potential, even though he's working. And therefore, because he's using it to its full potential, what is the result? He takes whatever he needs, and it's prasadam, because he's already offered his life to the service of Krishna. And he's not committing sin. The Prabhupada explains this in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam. I can find the reference. He quotes the verse, Ishavasam idang salam yat kincha jagajam jagat. He quotes that verse from the Ishupanishad, that everything animate or inanimate within this universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. One should therefore accept those things for himself, those things necessary for himself, which is set aside as his quota, and should not accept other things, knowing well to whom they belong. And Prabhupada explains it in this way. He takes whatever is necessary, whatever is his quota for himself, doesn't accept other things, knowing that ultimately everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, whatever he accepts as his quota is prasadam. And therefore, he lives. And the next verse, what is that verse? One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way, because that type of work will not bind him to the laws of karma. What's the Sanskrit? I forget. Anyways, it's not so important, but that's the truth. Kurvani veha karmani. That's right. Yeah, kurvani veha karmani. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he goes on working in that way, but that type of work will not bind him to the law of karma. He lives a sinless life. So, therefore, Narada Muni is explaining the same thing Well, what does the grihastha who earns a meaning of livelihood do? He must associate again and again with saintly persons and with great respect hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord in his incarnations, as these activities described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus, one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. So, this is how one becomes detached. He gradually becomes attached by becoming attached to the spiritual world. The more he becomes attached to hearing about Krishna, gradually he becomes detached from those things which reinforce his connection with the material world. And then in the next verse, he says, there's a long purport here. It's interesting. There's more. There's much more of his instructions about grihasthas. And it says, while working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, one who is actually learned should live in human society, unattached to family affairs, although externally appearing very much attached. Because sometimes he has to externally appear very much attached. Because some people may... And in the next verse he says, an intelligent man in human society should make his own program of activities very simple. If there are suggestions from his friends, children, parents, brothers, or anyone else, he should externally agree, saying, yes, that is all right. But internally, he should be determined not to create a cumbersome life in which the purpose of life will not be fulfilled. So, this is Narada Muni's instruction. He's specifically saying, yes, don't lose sight of the goal of life. If you get a lot of pressure, yes, you're right. You're right, I'll do it. Externally, he has to appear attached. But internally, like Prabhupada tells the story about, you know, a famous story Prabhupada tells about the woman who has the paramour. You know, the woman who has a paramour and the husband, she's even more attentive to her household duties, so the husband never suspects. But within her heart, she's always thinking of her lover. So in the same way, a devotee, I think this is what Lord Chaitanya actually wrote to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami too, in his letter, in response to them. He said, be attentive to your duties. And she'll be even, a woman who has a paramour, she's even more attentive. She makes it appear, it's like, she's very, very careful doing everything. So the husband never suspects what's in the heart. But within her heart, she's always thinking of her lover. And that example is given of how a devotee should live in this world. He should be very attentive to performing his duties. But someone may not like that. Someone may say, you're supposed to be attached to me. And this is, of course, the quandary. How to be attached and not be attached. How to be sufficiently detached. Well, Narada Muni is saying, if you want to be sufficiently detached, just don't be careful. Just one thing you have to do. You have to go on every day. And Prabhupada even says that. It'll be interesting. He says in the commentary to that verse, I'll just quote in the, not in the commentary, I think it's in the word for word translation. He translates the word abhikshanam. Excuse me, I'll find it. Where is abhikshanam? Abhikshanam. Oh, here it is. Shrinvan Bhagavato Bhikshanam. And the word abhikshanam actually means always. But Prabhupada says in the commentary, he says, commentary is beautiful. Anyways, I can't find it. Oh, yes. Another specific description here is Shrinvan Bhagavato Bhikshanam Avatara Katamritam. It is not that because one has finished Bhagavad Gita, he should not hear it again. The word abhikshanam is very important. We should hear it again and again. There is no question of stopping. Even if one has read these topics many times, he should go on reading again and again. Because Bhagavad Gita, the words spoken by Krishna's devotees about Krishna, are amritam, nectar. The more one drinks this amritam, the more he advances in his eternal life. But again and again and again. It's not that hear it and then stop. So, and he says that one who goes on hearing again and again and again, what happens? He goes on hearing about the spiritual world. He goes on hearing about Vaikuntha. He goes on hearing about the Supreme Lord and his various manifestations in the spiritual world, the description of the spiritual world, the activities of the residents of the spiritual world, the desires and the attachments that's there within their heart, the freedom from anxiety that is in Vaikuntha. And all, he reads all these natural relationships that exist between the eternal living entities and the Supreme Lord. And what happens is then one gradually becomes detached from the affection for his wife and children. Exactly like a man gradually awakens from a dream. So this is the duty of the householder. Of course, it's the duty of everyone. Not only the householders, but the duty of everyone is that every day that one actually has to hear these transcendental topics and narrations about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And then this is what human form of life is meant to be used for. If one doesn't use the human form of life, then it's considered to be like, what, like the ear holes of a snake? And second canto of the Bhagavad Gita, one whose ears don't hear the descriptions and considered to be no better than the ear holes of a snake. One's eyes who do not see the beautiful form of the deity are considered to be no better than the eyes and the plumes of a peacock. And one's head who does not bow down before the deity is considered to be like a person, like a king who wears a crown, but it just simply weighs him down. Weighted down by the weight of his crown, he glides down to lower forms of life. So, but then he says that persons who are devoid of Atmatattva, they do not inquire into these things. Sukadeva Goswami explains the same thing. Being too much attached to fallible soldiers, they think, you know, this is being too much attached. What is that verse? I'll find it real quickly because I just read it last night, actually. Yeah. Dehapatra kalacharishu atma sanyesha satsapi tesham pramato nidanam pasyanapi napasyati. Persons devoid of atma tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife, although sufficiently experienced. They still do not see their inevitable destruction. So, this is Lord Brahma's caution to the demigods, and he's saying, this is the value of the human form of life, that in the human form of life, people can hear the descriptions and narrations of Vaikuntha, they can hear instructions of saintly persons, and therefore they can use the human form of life to such full potential. Therefore, he says, even I, who have a body of a demigod, he says, even I also desire to have such a life. For in the human form of life, one can attain perfect religious truth and knowledge. And therefore, if one, in this human form of life, does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his abode, it is to be understood that he is very much affected by the influence of external nature. Of course, now we'll come up to the description of the Vaikuntha planets, which will be coming up in the subsequent verses, so we won't get into them today. Okay? I think we can end here, if that's okay. Any questions?
What is Atma Tattva
for you? Atma Tattva means truth about the Atma, the soul. Truth about Atma. Atma that. Okay.
Yesterday? Yeah. About speaking to about others. good about us. It doesn't sit right with me, but I've heard it enough times that we should be careful of saying nice things because we don't want the other person to become proud. That was one part. The other part was, I don't want to apologize because if I apologize, the other person will become proud, and that's not good for Christian consciousness. It doesn't sound right to me, obviously, but I just wanted to see what's the philosophical way of dealing with that idea, those two ideas particularly. Not praising and complimenting the person because it just makes them more bodily conscious or whatever, and not apologizing to people because it just makes them seem like they're right and it just.
Well, we have to take into consideration that the personalities that which we're praising generally are persons who are trying to become free from pride. If they're not trying to become free from pride, then certainly we shouldn't try to increase their pride. We should be very careful. We're specifically, what is that verse in the Bhagavatam? I quote it all the time. Somehow it's escaping me about a devotee has all the good qualities of the demigod, such as knowledge, religion, and renunciation, become manifest in a person who's engaged in devotional service of the Lord. On the other hand, a non-devotee, even though perfectly engaged in food, material activities, has no good qualities. So, in other words, a devotee is understood as somebody who's, as we described last night, the sadhaka, who is working on himself. He's trying to become free from pride. He's trying to become free from envy. He's trying to become free from these anarthas within the heart which are consuming him. So we should appreciate those endeavors. We should say something good about the devotee who's trying hard because he's trying to become free. The persons who aren't even trying, aren't even making the endeavors, then why should we increase their pride by glorifying them? And in fact, there's a very interesting point in this connection. And it's in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. Because recently one devotee asked me a question. He said, how do we avoid becoming too sentimental in our dealings with devotees? So I said, give me an example. Because I didn't know what he was talking about. So he said, well, for example, sometimes devotees get together and they say things like, oh, you are a pure devotee. I simply desire to have the dust from your lotus feet. And or, you know, they really go overboard, okay? And that's what the devotee was making. He's saying that how do we avoid this kind of sentimentality, you know, between devotees? What does it mean to glorify other devotees? And I came to mind in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam is the story of Prithu Maharaj. And Prithu Maharaj, I think it was when the professional reciters were glorifying him. Professional reciters were speaking and speaking about his glories. And Prithu Maharaj said, after listening to them, he said, actually, to tell you the truth, why are you saying things which have not yet manifested in me? He says, this is not really glorification. Why glorify things that are not visible and have not manifested yet? And Prabhupada explains in the purport, he says that when somebody glorifies somebody, that and beyond what has been manifested, it may appear to be a glorification, but actually it's an insult. So he says the same way Prithu Maharaj is saying, if you're going to say something that's there, visible. So in the same way, if we're going to speak the glories, praise the good qualities of a sadhaka, we should say something that's visibly there. They're trying. We should recognize it. they still may have pride. They still may have envy. They still may have anger. But at least they know that these things are there, and they're trying to overcome them. They're doing the work themselves. So why not appreciate them for doing some work? Why not say, this person is trying very hard? It will not only encourage them, but it makes other people appreciate, and that's the value of glorifying others. It makes other people appreciate that maybe they should be working also, because his example has been recognized. So it's not only for the benefit of the person, but it's also for the benefit of others who hear that glorification. That, yes, so-and-so is really doing this and doing that. And so that's one way to do it, because they're already trying to become free from pride. So it may seem like it's counteracting the effects of their efforts to become free from pride by glorifying them, but actually it's encouraging them, because we're recognizing what they're actually doing, not something that doesn't exist. We recognize something that they're actually doing. But that is not artificial glorification. And it's beneficial for everyone who hears. So that's how to deal with the pride issue. Is that answered?
Yes.
Now, there was the other part, which was...
Apologies.
Well, I'm not going to apologize because it'll... Well, that's... Yeah. Generally, sometimes, you know, people don't want to apologize because they're convinced they're right. So, why should I apologize? But... Or sometimes somebody doesn't want to accept apology, even. And sometimes they say, I don't want to accept apologize, because the only reason why he's apologizing is because he doesn't want to suffer. Because he knows if he doesn't apologize, he'll suffer. So I won't accept apology because there's no sincerity in the apology. He's only thinking, well, I've heard enough in the Bhagavatam of what happens if somebody says something or does something. The consequences that are there, that Krishna will not forgive him. And he'll be punished. I don't want to suffer. Prabhu, I'm sorry I did that. Finished. Now the person may say, what kind of apology is that? He just doesn't want to suffer, that's all. Sometimes a perceptive person may see that. So, point is that one should try to look within himself and actually find it. Did I really do something wrong? Am I always right? You know, that's one of the biggest things sometimes that people have to confront is, sometimes people are just convinced. I don't want to say the whole thing, it's just too much, but I was speaking to a person who was just totally convinced, although it was so far from the truth, but he was just so totally convinced that all his criticisms, which had no substance, were absolutely right. And I asked the person, I said, can you do me a favor? He wanted to write, he had this letter written out of all these claims that were not really, he didn't even bother to hear the other side. He had these claims written out about all these other people, and he wanted to publish it and circulate it amongst all the congregation. So I said, Prabhu, you know, maybe these things are not all correct. So I said, can we just wait and let's see if there's any substance to all these things? So before you circulate it? He said, I'll tell people that this is the truth, but I can't tell you because Naranjana Swami told me not to tell you. I mean, it's like a real graphic example. Of course, we're not supposed to speak about these things according to our discussion last night, but sometimes to make a point, to conclude a topic, we have to use examples. So I'm using the example, but I'm not naming the person in any way. Don't even know where the person is from. But the point is that sometimes people are so convinced that they're right, that to think that they were wrong is just beyond comprehension for them. I'm always right. And, you know, so under those circumstances, you've got a problem when it comes to... because you'll find an excuse not to apologize, and you'll say, I don't want to make that person proud, even though it's not really the reason at all. There's no connection with reality. It's like a dream. No connection with reality. It has nothing to do with making that person proud. The fact of the matter is I don't want to admit I'm wrong. So that's an element that has to be taken into consideration in regards to that question. And as far as making that person proud, again, that same, that other aspect of, well, if the person actually is sincere and isn't trying and is endeavoring, then they're also trying to deal with that pride. Better I apologize. Better I apologize if I did something wrong. You know, so that at least I'll avoid doing something like that again. So that should be our... Of course, if we didn't do anything wrong, and the other person just... then that's we have to look within our heart and evaluate. But we should always be very careful to avoid thinking that I'm always right. It's a very dangerous position to be in. Did I answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm missing myself in the
okay, so we can end here. Hare Krishna, Guru Ji Prabhu.
This comes from Guru Vrindaki.
Jai.
Maharaj Ji.
Jai.
The plans of now is to be back Friday evening. I will confirm that as the plan stands now. Set for a few moments.
Thank you.